The lectionary very conveniently provides us the television tradition of last week on our particular gospel, So that first passage is actually that first little bit about Jesus making himself equal to God, and then that being the source of the controversy. That's just a little footnote, or it's like a preamble that the lectionary puts in so that you can see the context day after day after day, because this conversation is still raging. As I mentioned, that the miracle becomes a launching pad for a teaching, and so we're still learning or still listening to Jesus teach in relationship to the healing that he does of the man near Bethpage. This is an important moment because Jesus is beginning to articulate more and more the teachings of the Sabbath and the work of God. And it's kind of funny because now you get to the whole point about testimony. And John, the evangelist who does the first letter of John, he comes up with something similar, but it draws very deeply on Christianity's Jewish heritage. Because in the Jewish world, there's two really important things that are required for a case or a trial or whatever to go through. You have to have two witnesses. You always have to have two witnesses that are willing to testify to any event. And then once on the testimony of these two witnesses, it is certifiably true. However, if it is proven to be untrue, the witnesses are punished according to the gravity of the witness. So say, on the basis of two witnesses, I think we will see this next week maybe with that story of Susanna, the really long reading that we get sometimes during the last little bits of Lent, where two old judges accuse a young woman, Susanna, of committing marital infidelity, because she refused to sleep with them, so they accused her of sleeping with a young man. And so, of course, she's about to be put to death. But then Daniel, the prophet, exposes these two judges as liars, and then they are the ones put to death. And it's a whole statement, indeed, about the necessity of credibility. In our culture, we have kind of forgotten this whole principle because we have seen how very dangerous people can use an entire system to give themselves a sense of credibility. And so now, of course, we don't know who to trust anymore. But the problem is that now we are willing to believe almost anybody saying almost anything. But our own level of truthfulness is a matter of justice. So I can say this maybe from my own personal experience as a priest, is that I have to be incredibly truthful and honest on a regular basis so that when I'm telling you something true later on, you're willing to believe me. It's the whole crying wolf scenario. Telling the truth is the great way in over the course of one's life, is the way of proving that when there's a really difficult thing in which your testimony has to be verified, then people will be able to say, I know this person, I trust them, and that even when the world seems to be rejecting him, I know that he would speak the truth. That is a corrective against what would happen, say, in the book of Daniel, where a simple system that would prevent a tyrannical person from getting in control and then having the entire society back them up. And so what Jesus does in his ministry is that he puts himself in the position of the rejected and the scorned. But this is really important when you read the Passion. Jesus does not go to his Passion going, oh, woe is me. He doesn't go in there treating himself like a victim. He is, theologically true, a victim. But he is not a victim in our common sense, the way in which we use the word. Because when he is going forward, he knows that his testimony is true. And he gives us a glimpse of this internal confidence in the way he's speaking today. I don't need you to tell me who I am. And that word, I am, comes with all of the Jewish import. I do not need you to tell me who I am. I know who I am, and my Father is testifying on my behalf. And so the only reason I want you to testify on my behalf is for your good, not for mine. He says this later on when the Father gives witness and says, I have glorified your name and I will glorify it again. And then Jesus says, that wasn't for me, that was for you. This is a man who knows entirely what his identity is. He knows who he is, where he's from, and where he's going. The result being is that although he can wear and experience the full pain of human alienation, at the exact same time he knows where he stands. The miracles then help point us to this direction. He says to them, the Father is witnessing to who I am by the works that I am doing. In other words, you will see this in the story of the man born blind. When the whole crowd is saying, we have never seen anything like this, that we've never seen a man born blind restored to health. Not even restored to health, given vision. You see another story very similar in the Synoptic Gospels when they'll say, we have never seen anything like this. The testimony is that never in the history of humanity have we seen someone with such authority over the demons, the spirits of the air, and over the body. But he's not meant to stop there. The final testimony is when Jesus is laid on trial by humanity and he gives no testimony in response. And two give testimony to his name, the Father and the Spirit. The Father raises him from the dead, and the Spirit gives witness that his work is effective because he is now sanctifying the human race. Both of these give witness to the glory and to the person of Jesus. And this is a great benefit for all of us, because on one level, it's really nice for us to be able to have those moments when you encounter a saintly person that really does give witness that God is present in the world. And those are lovely people to have in your life. Those people that just remind you by their personality and their presence that God is active. I have met many in my life, and they're lovely people to have on your address book. But don't put your full confidence in them. This is a huge mistake that Christians often make, where we assume that even the best of saints are perfect people. They ain't. The saints will be the first to tell you the depths of their own sins. And in fact, they are probably more aware of their own sinfulness than all of us combined in this little room. They know themselves. They know the truth about themselves. And that is why they can't put up with vain trumpery like money and acclaim and prestige and sycophantic friends. Because they know it to be empty, because they've met God. To grow into that personal experience of who God is, all of that really just goes. And it smells just as bad. But then knowing who this God is, knowing who he has given witness to, knowing who and what he has done for us in his Son, then we can go forward into our own personal crosses with the exact same confidence that Jesus has. Not that we're perfect. We can't have that one. Jesus could go to his cross in silence because he knows he is sinless. We can go forward to our cross knowing that in the end, I don't need to give testimony to other people. God will give testimony to the good deeds done. All I need to do is to give witness to the truth.